This is a place for everyone. This is a place where we can bring ourselves with all our true names. You are welcome here no matter where you've been before. You matter here, whether you believe in God all of the time, or some of the time, or none of the time. No matter what body brought you here, no matter who you love, you are welcome here at First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque. I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined today by our music director, Susan Peck, and our worship leader, Kristen Satterley. And I'd like to thank Reverend Katie Colbert from Tampa, Florida, for sharing the time for all ages with us today. Our DJ today is Melanie Rubin, and our tech team is Dan Small, Michaela Renz-Whitmore, Chris Paul, Raymond Wolfgang, and Cy Schuster. Thank you all very kindly for making it happen. Kristen has an announcement.
Good morning. Each week, the sermon sparks great conversation in the chat bar. We invite you to continue the conversation after the service on our Facebook page, First U ABQ. We'll post the link toward the end of the service today so you can click on over and share your thoughts with Reverend Bob and with each other.
Let's kindle our chalices here and at home. As we touch flame to wick, we touch each other's hearts with the light of truth, the fire of commitment, and the warmth of community. As we gather around these flames, may we be inspired to create a more just and caring world and to live more deeply into our values as Unitarian Universalists. Come, let us worship together.
Good morning, buenos dias. Will you please join me in singing our opening song? I'm putting the words in the chat bar, but we're also going to put the music up momentarily so you can see, because we're going to sing this familiar Unitarian round in Spanish. Se que abrirá esta rosa.
Good morning. I'm Mia Noren, the Director of Religious Education. One of the things we teach in religious education for children are the Unitarian Universalist principles, but we use simplified language designed for kids so that they can more quickly grasp the meanings. Last month, we began saying these principles together as we light our chalice. Later on during the class, we talk about which principles the lesson relates to. We've added a children's version of the proposed eighth principle, and besides appreciating its purpose, use it to explain how you use have a voice and can use their vote for change. Please enjoy this recording of one class sharing the children's principles during the chalice lighting. Miss Anne, would you light the chalice as we say our principles?
Each person is important.
Kind and fair in all you do.
We're free to learn together.
We search for what is true.
All people need a voice.
Build a fair and peaceful world.
We take care of our planet.
We work together for diversity and against racism and oppression.
Thank you, everybody.
Today's story is called Higgins, A Drop with a Dream, and it was written by Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Chris Bice. Once upon a time, there was a drop of water named Higgins. Higgins was no ordinary drop of water. He was a drop of water with a dream. Higgins lived in a valley where it had not rained in a very long time. So all the lovely green grass was turning brown, all the beautiful flowers were wilting, and all the trees were starting to droop. Higgins had a dream that one day the valley would be a beautiful place again. But what could he do? After all, he was only a drop of water. One day, Higgins decided to travel and tell others about his dream. All the other drops listened very politely, but no one believed that his dream would come true. "Higgins," said one, "get your head out of the clouds. You can't spend your whole life dreaming." Higgins decided that he had to do something to make his dream come true. So he began to think and think and think. One day, as he was walking by a rusty old bucket, he got an idea. "If enough of us drops of water got together in this bucket," Higgins thought, "there would be enough water to sprinkle on a few flowers to help them grow and become beautiful again." Eagerly, Higgins told everyone his great idea. But everyone thought he was being foolish. "That Higgins, he is nothing but a dreamer," they said. Higgins decided he had to do something to convince the others that he was right. So he said to them, "I don't know about you, but I'm getting in that bucket. I hope that some of you will join me. Then there might be enough water to help at least some of the flowers grow beautiful again." So Higgins ran as hard as he could, hopped way up in the air, and landed with a kerplunk in the bottom of the bucket. And there he sat, just a drop in the bucket. For a long time, Higgins was very lonely. It seemed like no one else was going to join him. But after a while, some of the other drops could see that the grass was dying and the flowers were wilting and the trees were drooping. They all agreed that something must be done. Suddenly, one drop shouted, "I'm going in the bucket with Higgins." And he leaped through the air and he landed kerplunk in the bucket. Then two other drops yelled, "Wait for us." And they hopped through the air and they landed in the bucket. Then 10 drops jumped through the air into the bucket. Then 30, then 50, then 100 of the drops came from all around just to hop in the bucket. Soon, the bucket was completely full of water. But there were still more drops that wanted to join. So they found another bucket and hopped in. Before long, there were 2 buckets of water, then 3 buckets of water, then four, then 10, then hundreds, then thousands of buckets of water. Along came a powerful breeze that blew over all the buckets, and all the water flowed together to make a mighty stream. Everywhere the water flowed, the grass turned green again, and the flowers bloomed, and the trees stood tall and straight once more. All of this happened because Higgins had a dream, and his dream came true. Because he knew that although he was just a drop in the bucket, enough drops in the bucket make a bucketful. And when there are enough buckets with the wind behind them, then justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I pray that we all have the vision and the bravery and the persistence of Higgins to speak up in support of change, and that we have the trust and the hope of Higgins' community who joined him, realizing the power of joining together to help the world grow and thrive with peace and freedom and equality. We will not give up. We are drops with dreams. The end.
Let's pause the chat for a few moments during the meditation and prayer. We'll turn the chat back on to share our joys and concerns. Close your eyes if that's comfortable for you and breathe gently. One breath, two breaths, three. Feel into your belly, your chest, your shoulders, wherever you store your sadness, wherever you feel your anger. Feel the stream of distress as it flows through your body, and then let it go. Return to your breathing, inhaling, exhaling. Oxygen traveling to the tips of your fingers and toes. Let your attention rest in this moment. Let go of the all of it and rest here, held by your community. Let go of the stream of distress. Be in this moment of togetherness across distance. Let's sit together in holy silence for 2 minutes. Each of our lives is wound through with rivulets of joy and worry, currents of gratitude and sorrow. Here in this shared space, in this beloved community, we are buoyed by each other's gladness and help to bear each other's burdens. When the music begins, again, share your joys and then your concerns in the chat bar for us to hold together. If you cannot write in the chat bar today, we still want to know what's going on with you. Please contact us at caring@uuabq.org. Now, let us share together what is on our hearts.
When we share joys and concerns, we see our lives as we journey together. We see so many joys, the joys of walks and music, of receiving vaccines, of making art, of brownies and promotions at work, and the joy of sobriety, the joy of that discipline and spiritual practice. We see many concerns too, concerns for our essential workers, and concerns for the planet and the climate and our ability to adjust. We see the concerns of those waiting for vaccines and the concerns of those who understand that the vaccine does not necessarily prevent us, even if we are vaccinated, from spreading the disease, and how we must remain cautious and courteous, respectful, even if we are vaccinated. Concerns for racism and the state of this country. All these joys and concerns, and those joys and concerns that we carry in our hearts but remain unspoken, these we lift up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal that are known by many names. Will you join me in the spirit of prayer? We pray today for Rachel Rodriguez, mother of Patrick and Andrew Rodriguez, mother-in-law of Alana and Elise. Rachel passed this week from COVID-19. May the family know the comfort of being carried in the hearts of this congregation, and may light perpetual shine upon Rachel. We lift up Judy Riley, who's recovering from a broken ankle. May her healing be fast and comfortable. In this time of transition from anger, despair, and loneliness to a time of hope and possibility, we pause to consider the ways that we have been hurt in the past year, the ways we were injured by witnessing things that we know to be wrong. As we consider what we have lost, may we acknowledge our wounds and take the time necessary to heal. May we honor that process of becoming whole again. And from that, return to our commitments to build a world of love and kindness. May we pause to notice the ways that the world is beautiful. May we breathe in the possibilities of life and growth and laughter. We give thanks for the gifts that we receive, large and small. Let us not consider whether we deserve them, but simply to bask in the grace of being here, being on earth, being together. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
Where the oil of gladness is all of mourning, we'll build a promised love that can be.
We'll build a love where we bring good tidings to all the afflicted and those who will mourn. We'll give them gardens instead.
Restoring a balance to all creation.
creation. Come build a love where all will be lost. Oh, come build a love, come gather together, anointed by God, and create peace, where justice shall flow down like the water, and peace, peace like an ever-flowing stream. Once faint and once weak, where like oaks of righteousness stand her people.
Come build a love, my people, we see. Oh, come build a love, come gather together, anointed by God, then create peace, where justice shall flow.
Our reading today is by the Reverend Teresa Soto. There are lots of ways to stay alive. You can wear soft clothes and focus on brushing your teeth and hydrating. You can ask yourself what you need and not be mad when you don't have an answer, only a shrug. You can breathe in, and then, with care, you can also breathe out. Taking the thing one single breath at a time. You can give yourself a chance. Remember not only your mistakes, but also all the ways that you matter. From eyelash to shoelace, you matter. You matter when you are sad, when the world is heavy like wet laundry dragging from your arms. You matter when you are angry, and you use your teeth like welded prison bars to keep the words that might cause harm from escaping past your lips. There are many ways to stay alive. You can come, heart wrapped in several layers of foil, mashed into a plastic box with an ill-fitting lid, to a place where people say your name like it is good news. You can fight your way toward freedom. I recommend that you decline the option of struggling by yourself. The point is to get your life. There was this wise ruler who said once that by ourselves we are unprotected, but two people together can face the worst. The failure, the heartbreak, the upending of worlds we hold in our hearts, and the secret shame that we will shed like the skin of a smooth snake, though it will take some time. And with three people, you being one of them, you may find that eventually all will be well.
Mm. Thank you. Bayard Rustin said, "The proof that one truly believes is in action." There's a wonderful documentary called Brother Outsider about the civil rights activist Bayard Rustin, and it's available on Vimeo, of all places. And if you like this sermon, I suggest you check it out. Bayard Rustin was born in 1912 in West Chester, Pennsylvania. He was raised by his grandmother. I'm going to shut my office door for my old dog.
Dude, enough. Oh, we give thanks for old dogs.
Bayard Rustin was born in 1912 in West Chester, Pennsylvania. He was raised by his grandmother, who brought him up in the Quaker faith. He was always an overachiever. He played sports, was a wonderful singer and guitar player, and always excelled in school. For a Black man in a racist society, he was extraordinarily self-assured. Wow, this dog will just not. One moment, please. I really apologize. He was extraordinarily self-assured. Perhaps it was his Quaker upbringing that carried the message that everyone carries the light of the divine within. Rustin was never one to endure injustice. And before he was out of high school, he was already fighting Jim Crow. He insisted on sitting in the white section of a diner in his little town of West Chester. And later he joked that he was stunned to learn that his small town actually had three police cars. His Quaker upbringing also informed his protest tactics. He absolutely believed in nonviolence deep into his core. He once said that there are three ways to deal with injustice. One is to accept it slavishly, or one can resist it with arms, or one can use nonviolence. A man who believes in nonviolence is prepared to be harmed, to be crushed, but he will never crush others. Once in the 40s, well before the Rosa Parks and Montgomery bus boycott, Rustin sat in the front of the bus. The police were called and began to drag him off. When they began to kick him, he sat up and said, "Officers, there's no need to do that. I'm not resisting." Now, Rustin, like every human being, had many identities. We all contain multitudes, and our full community, our full humanity, can't be summed up in one label, one demographic from the census. In addition to being a Black man, Rustin was also gay. And his queer identity is tied up in his activism. He described the scene from the bus later. As I made my way to the back of the bus, a white child reached out to touch my tie. His mother pulled the child back in disgust. And I thought, if I go and sit quietly at the back of the bus now, that child, who was so innocent of race relations that it was going to play with me, will have seen so many Blacks go in the back and sit down quietly that it's going to end up saying, "They like it back there. I've never seen anybody protest against it." I owe it to that child, not only to my own dignity, I owe it to that child that it should be educated to know that blacks do not want to sit in the back, and therefore I should get arrested, letting all these white people in the bus know that I do not accept that. And here's where he makes the link to his identity as a gay man. It occurred to me shortly after that it was absolutely necessary for me to declare homosexuality, because if I didn't, I was part of the prejudice. I was aiding and abetting the prejudice that was a part of the effort to destroy me. That's the end of the quote. Rustin went to college at Wilberforce University, and ever the activist, he organized his college to protest the quality of food in the dining hall. For his efforts, he was invited to leave school, but finished up at City College in New York City. He joined the Young Communist League, inspired by the way that they linked justice for workers with justice for people of color. But he became disillusioned at the beginning of World War II when the League began to focus on encouraging the US to join the war after the Germans invaded the Soviet Union. Not only was he opposed to war as a Quaker, he was angry that the Communist Party abandoned their commitment to racial justice. He then connected with a committed nonviolence organization called the Fellowship of Reconciliation, and would go on to do significant work with them. When the US did join the war, there was a draft. And of course, as a Quaker, Rustin objected. He wrote a letter to his draft board saying that because of his principles as a person committed to nonviolence, he would not register. And he wrote that he would accept any consequences of this stance. And indeed, he served 3 years in prison for violating the Selective Service Act as an act of conscience. And of course, because he was Bayard Rustin, while he was there, he organized protests against the segregated dining facilities. When Rustin was released after the war, he returned to his work with the Fellowship of Reconciliation. There, he became involved in what's known as the classical period of the civil rights movement, when leaders like Martin Luther King were emerging. He worked on the first freedom rides, and he traveled to India to learn more about nonviolence from the students of Gandhi. As part of an action that sent pairs of men, one black and one white, to ride segregated buses together, he was arrested in North Carolina and spent 2 weeks on a chain gang, breaking rocks. And he published a story about his dehumanizing experience, and the chain gang law in North Carolina was canceled not long after that. Now, a pivotal moment for Rustin came in 1953. In 1953, he was arrested in Pasadena, California, when he was found in a car making love to another man. He pled guilty and he spent 60 days in jail. Where before, his employers and colleagues could pretend to ignore Rustin's sexuality, it was now in the open. His mentor from the Fellowship of Reconciliation, Reverend A.J. Musty, tried to talk him out of being gay, even sending him to a psychiatrist. And you can guess how that went. And I want to be clear that I'm not making a joke here. Conversion therapy, which is the pseudoscience that a person can be cured of their sexuality, is torture. And the thing that really makes me furious as a religious leader is that it's often dressed up as faux religious practice, where someone can pray the gay away. It's sometimes called ex-gay ministries, and it's total nonsense. And when I say nonsense, I'm thinking of another word that I can't say in the pulpit. Conversion therapy is torture. It's still legal in 30 states, and it is wrong. Anyways, this episode will begin a long pattern where critics of Rustin's politics would attack him for being gay. Even his allies struggle with maintaining their respectability, And then, and also taking advantage of his amazing organizing skills and brilliant political analysis. When Martin Luther King wanted to organize the bus boycott in Montgomery, it was Rustin who schooled him on nonviolent disobedience tactics. Rustin said, "I think it's fair to say that Dr. King's view of nonviolent tactics was almost non-existent when the boycott began. In other words, Dr. King was permitting himself and his children and his home to be protected by guns." Rustin convinced King to abandon the armed protection, including a handgun that he carried. Rustin knew that having integrity, having a truly powerful message, required that one must walk the talk. One must lead by example. In 1960, Martin Luther King and Rustin were planning on organizing a march on the Democratic National Convention to nominate the presidential candidate in LA. And Adam Clayton Powell, who was a Black Democratic congressman representing Harlem, was opposed to this march. And he used the tactic of homophobia. He threatened to spread a rumor that MLK and Rustin were sexually involved. MLK was so terrified by this that he fired Rustin from that effort, and the march never happened. Regardless, Rustin was known as a genius of logistics. So MLK came around again and tapped him to organize the 1963 March on Washington. However, because of the state of homophobia in the 60s, his position in the march was listed as deputy to the director of the march, despite being responsible for all aspects of planning the event, a huge event. Regardless, Senator Strom Thurmond still attacked him from the floor of the Senate 3 weeks before the march, calling him a communist, a draft dodger, and a homosexual. Rustin was undaunted, though, and the march was one of the pivotal moments in the civil rights movement. Byard continued to work for a variety of causes, but usually behind the scenes because of public and private discomfort with his open homosexuality. He worked internationally on behalf of Soviet Jewry and in Africa. When France was testing its first nuclear weapons, he tried to organize a nonviolent protest when France planned to test an atomic bomb in the desert of its colony, Algeria. He got a group together to go occupy the area where the bomb would be exploded, but they were turned away and the test happened anyways. This was, in fact, the outcome that Rustin expected, but he felt that even if a victory was unlikely, he had to cry out in protest. He did a lot of amazing things, too many to list here. He finally passed in 1987 during a humanitarian trip to Haiti. Rustin's life offers some insights into the idea of us all getting free together. He was never a separatist, and he famously debated Malcolm X on that idea of being a separatist versus being an integrationist. He was committed to the value of every human being and the need to take us all along towards a freedom that we all share. Rustin was certainly not free, not from a state that wanted to deny his full humanity as a Black person and a gay person. But it's interesting that he was certainly free from two burdens that many of us carry. He seemed to be free from fear, and he seemed to be free from shame. Now, if we're all going to get free together, we certainly all need to get free from institutional and structural racism. We are all captive, white and BIPOC people together, in the cage of white supremacy. We are all lessened by being in this system. But we also need to get free together from the cages of shame and fear. Now, shame is different from guilt. Guilt is when I say, I did something bad. Shame is when I say, I am a bad person. We're surrounded by forces that tell us all the time that we are less than. Because we live in a consumer society where marketing invades our every moment, we're constantly told that our value is affirmed and increased by the things that we buy. Without these things, we are not complete, not good enough. We're forced to compare ourselves to others who we believe to be better off than us. And better off means simply better. We're told our bodies aren't good enough, our personalities are lacking, our contributions are insignificant. Our Unitarian Universalist first principle, that each person has inherent worth and dignity, that each person has value simply because they exist, that is a challenge. It's a challenge to this kind of thinking. And it's a challenge to us as Unitarian Universalists to actually live as if that was true and to generously apply that value to everyone, including and especially ourselves. Rustin was a Quaker to the core, but he aligned with the UUs because he never questioned his value or anyone else's. Nonviolent protest was his way of insisting on the value of the oppressed, but never taking away from the basic human value of his oppressors. He wanted them to change, and he never wanted to kill them or to harm them or to crush them. And Rustin seemingly did not experience fear. From a young age, he placed himself at risk. He placed his bodies in the gears of the machinery of oppression for the purpose of gumming up the works. And being arrested held no terror for him. Often those arrests included beatings, and yet he kept getting arrested over and over. As for us, fear means different things to different people. And I want to speak directly to folks who have marginalized identities. Not all fear is the same. For some, fear is not only reasonable, it's a necessary survival strategy. When it's possible to be attacked simply for being who you are, fear is a good source of information. So I'd like to differentiate between an appropriate fear that helps us stay alive and the fears, our failures of courage, that diminish us. Thinking of the fear that we may experience discomfort because of our views, the fear that we might be thought less of for holding true to our authentic selves. Thinking of the fear that keeps us from loving boldly, that keeps us from showing our true faces, that keeps us from sharing our vulnerabilities. And it's interesting how fear and shame are bound together. We fear shame. Sometimes that's a good thing, actually, where our fear of doing something dishonorable, something that'll cause us to lose face, keeps us in check in moments of weakness or temptation. But Bayard Rustin never felt shame for who he was. And I think that's why he never feared the consequences of being fully himself. Being fully ourselves and being unafraid. I know that's a tall order. We're working against forces that keep us fearful. Perhaps our childhood did not leave us feeling safe. Perhaps we had experiences as young adults or adults that linger with us. I'm a survivor of PTSD, and I know how hard it can be to feel safe, and the lengths that we will go, healthy or not, to keep that feeling of safety. It's hard. So how do we right here at First Unitarian, all get free together? I think the key lies in that last word, together. You might have heard me talk about the principles of trauma-informed care. They are at heart a guidebook of how to be together without shame or fear. Let me tell you about it. The five guiding principles of trauma-informed care are: one, safety, which means ensuring physical and emotional safety. That means that the spaces that we share are welcoming and privacy is always respected. Two, choice, which means giving individuals the ability to choose whether they participate or not. Good example is when we're doing a check-in during a meeting and we offer the option to pass. You know, another word for choice is consent. We must always have consent in every situation. Three, collaboration. That means making decisions together and respecting the wishes of everyone as best we can. Nothing about us without us, right? Four, trustworthiness. And that is being consistent, maintaining healthy interpersonal boundaries, always telling the truth. Finally, fifth, empowerment. That is creating an atmosphere that allows individuals to feel validated and affirmed with every interaction. What if we practice trauma-informed church? Not because we want to be fixated on our trauma, but because those principles are really good ways of being together. Ways of being together that allow us to be brave together, that allow us to be authentic together, that allow us to be vulnerable together. I think we're already on that path as a congregation. And my prayer is that we'll continue to be a community where we make this journey to wholeness together, supporting each other, supporting ourselves. Bayard Rustin said, "The proof that one truly believes is in action." I know that we truly believe these things, so let's continue to show it in our actions. Blessed be, and may it be so.
May it be so. This quarter's Change for the Future recipient is the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. The ACLU of New Mexico protects and advances justice, liberty, and equity as guaranteed by the constitutions of New Mexico and the United States, and is especially focused on groups that have been historically disenfranchised. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can simply mail a check to the church and include Change for the Future in the memo line. Let us now exercise the enduring power of generosity.
Ever wonder how the ties that bind get broken all to pieces, then mend themselves time after time? When mom and dad might sometimes let you down, well, they never mean to hurt you. They'd take it back if they knew how. And sometimes friends will feel like family too. If you trust them with your secrets, they might just turn their backs on you. And if it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life. It's only love that gets you through. It's only love that reminds you who you are, your very own North Star. And oh, it's only love, it's only love, it's only love, 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 love. Ever wonder how the bravest soul gets shaken to its core and then bounces back completely whole? I bet it feels like you're the only one with your hands up in the air, your heart up in your throat, just holding on. Trouble finds you in the darkest place like a heat-seeking missile, and your tears are burning all down your face. And if it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life. It's only love that gets you through. It's only love that reminds you who you are, your very own North Star. It's only love, it's only love, it's only love, 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 love. If it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life.
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and thank you on behalf of the ACLU of New Mexico. As we approach the end of our service, I want to invite you to linger after the service. And if you want to talk to your sibling congregants, just stay till the end of the credits and you'll be randomly placed into a breakout room. And while you're there, I want to invite you to maybe discuss this question. What are the times when you've overcome shame and fear or fear? And what helped you do that? What are the times when you've overcome shame or fear, and what helped you to do that? As we extinguish our chalices now, may we remember that by ourselves, we are unprotected. But two people together can face the worst. And with three people, you being one of them, you may find that eventually, all will be well. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.